I'm Montse Alvarado. Welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
We'll stop Donald Trump's extreme abortion bans.
Vice President Kamala Harris's first rally in the race for the White House targets abortion. March for Life President Jeannie Mancini provides analysis on the quickly changing political landscape.
Until I suffered the injustice we all did at that national championships of competing against a man.
Changes to Title IX spark multiple lawsuits to protect girls' safety and free speech. The Justice Department is now asking the Supreme Court to intervene. And on the road to a pro-life America, a multi-state mission to understand what's needed next to advocate for the unborn.
We trust women to make decisions about their own body and not have their government tell them what to do. And when Congress passes a law to restore reproductive freedoms, as President of the United States, I will sign it into law.
Vice President Kamala Harris keeps abortion front and center as she kicks off her presidential campaign. Vice President Harris has been the Biden administration's voice on abortion, with a national tour promoting the killing of children in the womb as a so-called right. She is the first sitting vice president to visit abortion providers and staff. This footage from that visit in March. While not an official candidate of the Democratic Party yet, Harris does have the necessary delegate votes to be on the ticket now that President Biden has bowed out of the race. Meantime, GOP leaders avoided the topic of abortion during the Republican National Convention altogether. Former President Donald Trump said during the presidential debate he wants to leave the issue up to the states. And his running mate, J.D. Vance, once a staunch pro-lifer, seems to have waffled on the issue, most recently in an MSNBC interview where he said he supports access to the abortion drug mifepristone. Abortion will be on the ballot in multiple states come this November. Our sister organization, the Catholic News Agency, has an interactive map you can follow on their website, catholicnewsagency.com. Leading pro-life advocate Jeannie Mancini, president of the March for Life, joins us now to discuss abortion in the upcoming election. Jeannie, welcome and thank you for joining us. Over the last few weeks, we've seen a lot of changes on the Republican position on life, very different from 4 years ago. Is there hope that the Republican Party will support protections for the unborn?
Yeah, well, Montse, thanks so much for having me and thanks for doing this piece. It was really disappointing, frankly, how we saw the Republican platform play out. And of course, the March for Life is a non-sectarian and nonpartisan organization. But for many, many years, really since the early 1980s, the Republican platform every single 4 years has gotten stronger and stronger on this issue. So truly what happened in just last week was that this got very much undone. Life was mentioned, but it was a sort of small tip of the hat, and even really with some confusing language. So it was incredibly disappointing, but all is not lost, right? Like, we don't put our heart here in the politics of the issue. We work to change hearts and minds.
Well, what do you make then of J.D. Vance's support of abortion pills? We know that most abortions occur because of the access to abortion pills.
So we have to be fair. We can only trust his words. Now, what I can say is that J.D. Vance spoke just in October at our Ohio March for Life, and that I believe that he is a very pro-life person. But especially when you're running for office, when people come out publicly, and you mentioned that terrible Meet the Press interview, when you come out publicly for something like access to chemical abortion, he needs to set the record straight, because we can only go by his words at this point. So my hope is that he will, that especially now with Kamala Harris possibly being the presidential candidate on the Democratic side, that he will set the record straight on what he stands for. And if not, then we just have to trust that he does stand for a chemical abortion and open access to that, which is really disappointing.
Disappointing and dangerous. Well, we also had J.D. Vance on the show on Pro-Life Weekly back in November. And here's a snippet of what he had to say. Let's take a listen.
I knew a lot of young women growing up in a poor family in the Midwest that felt like they had to choose abortion when an unplanned pregnancy happened. And I think that we have to speak with a certain amount of compassion. We have to recognize that very often the choice to have an abortion is not one made because people don't like life. It's because they don't feel like they have an option.
the pregnancy centers that have been targeted by the Biden-Harris administration and the Democrats asking to ban them. Does this election cycle provide opportunities for us to bolster support for pregnancy centers so that women actually have a choice the way that J.D. Vance described?
Ooh, that's a great question, Monse, and it's so necessary right now. I think we should pitch that very much to the different campaigns, but I can tell you from Kamala Harris's background and her history, she went after pregnancy care centers in California, forcing them to basically advocate for abortion. And ultimately, that case went to the Supreme Court, and she lost, thanks be to God. But she is no friend of pregnancy care centers.
Absolutely not. Well, she's been stumping on the idea of so-called abortion, a right to abortion. How do the large number of congressional seats up this election season affect the possibility of that, that she would actually have a bill to sign into law at some point?
Well, let's just say it's critical. And here's why. Let's just look at her record. The short story here is she is the most radical abortion, I've heard the word czar, extremist that we could possibly have in the highest office in our country. So she is not for even a ban on late term or a protection against late term abortion. In fact, when she was asked about where she stands on even a 20-week limit, so what we're talking about here is what mainstream America for well over 15 years would want. She said, no, 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 there should be no limits. She was the co-sponsor of the most pro-abortion bill ever that's been brought before the Senate or the House, the deceptively named Women's Health Protection Act. Of course, we can remember when she was California Attorney General, she went after our friend David DeLayden, who was a whistleblower on Planned Parenthood. She, by the way, got campaign funds from Planned Parenthood for running for Senate when she was the California Attorney General. So she is no friend of life, and we really need to keep a close eye on her record.
Is there anything that you would want to see? I mean, we heard J.D. Vance with his pitch on pregnancy centers. I don't know if that's going to transfer into this election season, but is there something that you would want to see that you think would cut across both sides of the aisle so that there could be protections for life this election season?
There are so many potential creative bills that can be supportive of life, right while it's in the womb, but after the baby is born. For example, Senator Rubio had introduced a wonderful bill. So I think bills along those lines could possibly appeal to both sides.
Well, we look forward to that, and we'll keep holding everyone accountable. Thank you so much, Jeannie.
Thanks for having me, Monse.
Kelsey Pritchard, the State Public Affairs Director of Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America, is here to narrow down what this election could mean for the states. Kelsey, welcome. Thank you for being with us. We just asked Jeannie Mancini about the congressional races. What are you watching the closest for this November?
I think the dynamic has shifted slightly with Kamala Harris, now the front runner of the Democrat Party. And it's become even more clear that abortion is going to be front and center this election. While Joe Biden had trouble saying the word abortion, Kamala shouts the word abortion. She's a shout your abortion candidate. She supports abortion in all 9 months of pregnancy and was a co-sponsor of legislation to force states to enact all trimester abortion mandates. And she also was the first sitting vice president to visit an abortion business. So it's very clear with her stance. Also, she recently said that she wants to shut down pregnancy centers. It's very clear that this is going to be front and center. And we are very focused on winning this race. And we've got people on the ground in battleground states. We have 8 battleground states we're focused on, including Arizona, Montana, Georgia, and 5 others, where we're talking to voters at their homes, at their doorsteps, and explaining to them how extreme Kamala is and how important it is that we win the House and the Senate this November.
Now, when we look at the way the local reality for abortion, right? Abortion after the Dobbs decision was sent back down to the states for consideration, and we had a bunch of losses at the state level. You've got at least 6 states that want to add abortion rights to their state constitutions. How do the presidential elections affect the success of these ballot initiatives, and are any of them winnable?
Yeah, we are very focused on 6 red states that could potentially have abortion on the ballot this November. That includes South Dakota, Arizona, Florida, and a few others. And these are very extreme abortion amendments. They allow all trimester abortion, and they even affect parental rights and health and safety requirements for women. And they mandate Medicaid funding of abortion. So taxpayers will be funding abortions under these amendments. With Kamala at the top of the ticket, it's going to be hard for the abortion amendment campaigns to deceive people into these amendments being about so-called freedom or health care. It's very clear where Kamala stands on the issue. And with her in these states supporting these ballot measures, it's going to be easier to draw the line of how extreme the amendments are. And we hope that it helps bring the attention to what the amendments actually do, rather than the deceptive messages that the pro-abortion campaigns will be putting out there. And so lives are at stake this campaign and this election, and we all need to get out there and do our part and vote and talk to our friends and family this November.
Lives are certainly at stake. Thank you so much, Kelsey.
Thank you.
The Federal Department of Education has gone about its effort to rewrite Title IX, and it's having a very devastating effect. It's something that is a great alarm to all of us because it's a harm, and it could be a great harm to women and girls, and especially in athletics and all these other arenas.
Turning now to the Biden administration's rewrite of Title IX, which takes effect on August 1st. You just heard House Speaker Mike Johnson say how dangerous these rewrites are, and many Americans feel the same. At least 15 states have challenged the new Board of Education regulations. Title IX is a federal law enacted more than 50 years ago in 1972 that prohibits discrimination on the basis of sex in education programs and activities. Women faced exclusion from some colleges, universities, more frequent tenure denials than men, just to name a few. The law also aims to protect women from sexual harassment. The Biden administration changed the language of Title IX from protecting women from sex discrimination to make it about so-called gender identity. The changes would open girls' bathrooms and locker rooms to allow boys who identify as girls to use their facilities. The Biden administration and many LGBTQ plus advocates say it's all about supporting the transgender community.
Anything that we can do that says that to folks that they belong, that they are, have an equal right to this space or community.
While LGBTQ advocates say inclusion is the goal of the Title IX changes, there are many who say they don't feel safe having a man in a woman's locker room. The new guidelines don't stop there. They also attack freedom of speech. The new wording would require teachers to use someone's preferred pronouns, therefore compelling speech. And for girls who say they're uncomfortable having a man in her locker room, well, that can be deemed as discriminatory. The controversial changes have sparked legal disputes in states across the country. Some 26 states are challenging Title IX regulation changes. Those are highlighted here in red and blue. Those in red are states where Title IX changes are currently on hold. On Monday, the Department of Justice asked the Supreme Court to intervene in those disputed states. The new rule will not take effect in all 50 states due to these lawsuits. We're joined now by Michelle Exner, senior advisor at Parents Defending Education, to dive into these changes. Michelle, welcome to the show. Speaker Mike Johnson talked about how dangerous these Title IX changes are. What is the practical impact, and what do these legal challenges look like?
Yeah, absolutely. So the impact is jarring, frankly, for women and females across the country. And as a mom of a 10-year-old little girl who plays sports, I'm infuriated by this. So the impact, just like was summarized in the segment here. So one, and I think the most glaring, is the fact that it now opens up female sports and spaces to biological males, right? We're talking about locker rooms. We're talking about sports fields. We're talking about overnight lodging if there goes on field trip. And also a second portion of this is free speech, right? Now we're compelling individuals, Americans, to compel their speech. And this is a violation of their constitutional rights. And also lastly, something that I don't think is as mentioned is the fact that this it also impacts due process, right? You know, as Americans, we are owed these rights. And with the Biden's Title IX, Biden and Vice President Harris's rewrite of this, it now impacts that for students as well.
And when we look at these challenges, what is it that's being challenged? How are these states hoping to stop these changes?
Absolutely. And so we have seen litigation across the country as soon as this was filed, and Parents Defending Education was proud to be involved in one of those legal efforts. Right now, our lawsuit is ongoing. We filed that with alongside Speech First and the Independent Women's Forum. And so that is still ongoing. We're waiting to see the results of that. The legal cases are talking about how this is unfairly impacting women and girls in these states. And so what we've seen injunctions filed in several of those lawsuits already. And what that means is that in those particular states and universities impacted, they will not have to implement Biden's Title IX rewrite until these legal action has followed through their course, which is good news for the families and parents and girls, especially in those states. So that's good news there. And we hope that it continues to move in that right direction.
It is good news, but the funding still hangs in the balance, especially since these are federal funds. So congressional and presidential elections really matter here. Let's go to the Olympics. They're starting. Everyone has sports on their minds. Would these changes in Title IX affect collegiate sports as well?
Yes, it's both anywhere that federal funding flows to those academic institutions, Title IX impacts. And so absolutely, when we're thinking about those collegiate athletes at these schools and who they're pulling from and who gets to place in first, second, third, right? And who gets to stand on those podium, who gets to keep those records, that is impacted, right? We've seen one particular example, an athlete in West Virginia, right, where there's a lawsuit ongoing. This male, biological male, has beat female track athletes 700 different times, right? And this is just one case of many. This is science. This is indisputable that it is unfair to women and girls. And I think you need to see no further than you don't see this on the other side, right? Where are the stories of the biological females that are clamoring to go and compete in male sports? Perhaps I've missed them, but I just don't see them. And I think that is clear evidence of why this Title IX rewrite by the Biden and Harris administration is completely sexist and against girls and females.
Now, you mentioned you're a mom yourself. What recourse do these parents and girls have if their local representatives have not sued? You're part of a lawsuit, but what about those who don't have access to that?
Absolutely. And so I think with, school is going to be starting up here in the next couple of weeks. And I think parents should call up their school districts and ask, how is this going to impact my school, right? How will this violate the security and safety that my female daughter should be able to expect in schools and for parents to be able to expect? So call them and demand answers. And there's courses, find allies in the community that are willing to stand with you and just take a stand against it. Make sure that they know, they hear your voices, and I know that there's people in the community. Because at the end of the day, the polling clearly shows that this decision is completely unpopular. There was a Gallup poll just a couple months ago that says 70%+ of Americans believe that female athletes should be playing on female sports teams, and biological males should not be playing on female sports teams. And so the fact that the Biden-Harris administration did that is really a slap in the face to female girls and their parents out there. So I encourage all of the parents to know that there's people and organizations like Parents Defending Education out there fighting for them, but also stand up in your community and make sure to have their voices heard.
Well, I'm sure that you have more resources online, Parents Defending Education. Thank you so much, Michelle.
Thanks for having me.
A tour across nearly two dozen states of the United States with a pro-life twist. Up next, a journey of prayer and learning about the pro-life and pro-abortion movements in the United States. We take a ride with the Westbrooks. Stay with us.
There's a lot of hurt out there, and we just did this research project that shows some 690 abortion facilities still open our country post-Dobbs. We presented this project in order to go out and actually see what's happening on the ground.
documenting the front lines of the pro-life movement, a unique journey 2 years after the overturning of Roe, to find out the next best moves for saving the preborn. Coalition Life is a ministry of professional pro-life sidewalk counselors, prayer volunteers, and resources that started more than a decade ago. Today, it has 43 staffers working in 3 states and has helped more than 4,000 women walk away from abortion facilities. In seeking to expand the organization, the founder, Brian Westbrook, wanted to get a better idea of what was needed, so he and his wife decided to hit the road and see for themselves. But as you'll find out, they weren't alone.
The tour includes 20 states, starting in Missouri through Illinois, all the way down through Georgia, Florida, all the way up the Eastern Seaboard to New York, then Ohio, Detroit, which is also Michigan, Indiana, and then back home. So 20 total states, dozens of abortion facilities, tons of interviews.
The trip was long, one state to the next, day after day of new cities and unknown neighborhoods for 34 days.
One day we visited over 8 abortion facilities in one day, and it was a tough road.
And at times, dangerous.
We had one tire that was just going low. We ordered a couple of new tires. Those were the wrong tires, literally fishtailing down the highway. It wasn't easy. By any stretch of the imagination.
But their mission was clear, and they felt called to keep moving forward. After about a year of planning, Brian and Marissa Westbrook finally began a more than month-long pro-life tour. And they weren't alone.
They said, the only way we can make this work for our family is if we include our children.
7 children ranging in age from 16 years old to just 1 year took part in the journey.
We just took our transit, our 15-passenger transit, and we pulled out the last couple rows. We jammed it full of everything you could need for a month, mm-hmm. and then some. And so we just stayed in hotels, and then we did some Airbnbs.
The family of 9 piled into a van to experience the pro-life movement firsthand in cities other than their own. But the Westbrook children weren't just along for the ride.
We had the children help plan out what cities. They had a Google map, and they mapped out the abortion facilities and the pregnancy centers.
They were an integral part of outlining the trip, documenting the stories of those they met, and posting them online.
The children, they learned everything from video to lighting to uploading computer skills.
They're learning different laws that are going on in each state. They're learning how to communicate with people, how to just basic skills, like life skills.
More importantly, they learned about spreading the pro-life message. Each child had a specific job at the pregnancy centers and abortion clinic sites they visited.
They took their job serious.
They did.
The 4-year-old had the salt, so she had to sprinkle it on the sidewalk, and the 6-year-old he drew his pictures.
Yeah. We've got hundreds of pictures out there in front of these abortion facilities of, you know, just life. And we were really excited that the children were able to bring those prayers to the sidewalk. Nothing's more powerful than the prayers of children.
The other ones were either camera crew or help with the baby.
The family prayed, drew chalk pictures of life and love, spread salts blessed by a priest, spoke with pro-life advocates on the sidewalks and in pregnancy centers, and gathered information on how to provide the option of life for women near these facilities.
So when we're looking at these abortion facilities nationwide, we want to know what the landscape is on the ground. And so we were making notes of fences and sidewalks and parking and the general environment. Does it feel like a safe environment to do sidewalk counseling at? Was it not?
They did come across hostile environments for pro-life advocates in some areas.
So we were in Boston, and we were just recording, and there were 4 women escorts there. And one of the sidewalk counselors handed a woman information, and immediately the escort there ripped it out of her hand and threw it into the sidewalk counselor's face. And we're all just shocked.
They didn't want us to be able to talk to these women.
The Dobbs decision may have enlightened some states to protect the unborn, but not others.
Most eastern states, they're just kind of, it was a speed bump maybe in these eastern states, and there's a ton of work still to be done on the ground.
Advocates for the unborn are now forced to go on the defensive.
What we also saw is that states like Massachusetts are pushing back by the state itself is spending $1 million to smear pregnancy centers. That just doesn't seem like a very good use of tax dollars. And in New York State, they're now going after these pregnancy centers as well. And they're filing lawsuits and saying that they are false or misleading just by offering help.
Brian Westbrook says not all hope is lost. The work he sees is inspirational and bigger than we realize.
All we saw throughout the entire Eastern Seaboard is pregnancy centers who want to love and give. They gave us a paradigm, a brand new paradigm as far as what is the pro-life movement and how big and broad the movement is, which I think is very, very big. There's a lot of hidden pro-life involvement and pro-life ministries out there.
But the Westbrooks also say it's time for the pro-life movement to up their game, to increase public relations, be loud on social media, educate families on the realities of abortion, and join forces.
In order to push back on the billions of dollars that the pro-abortion movement has, we need to collaborate. There's no way we're going to win this cultural battle if we don't work together. Got to, step on the ground in front of all of these abortion facilities and pray for an end to abortion. It's something we've never done before. I'm not sure if we'll ever have a chance to do it ever again.
We made this 34-day journey together, and you'd think that we'd fight at the end of this, but I think it's actually made us stronger.
And they hope documenting this tour will bear much fruit.
Our vision for 10 years is a country where every single woman who seeks out an abortion would first meet an advocate for life.
Thank you for watching. Head over to EWTN.com/pro-life to sign up for our newsletter and get the latest news right in your email. Remember, life is a gift. Your life is a gift. God bless.